Hello. Welcome to another moment with Eric Fleming. I am your host, Eric Fleming. And I want to start this episode with a quote. We can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist. That was a quote from James Baldwin. And that quote is timeless as far as where we are. So the title of this episode is It's Not Safe Anymore. And I know people a lot of times look at folks that have opinion shows, whether it's on TV, cable, or podcasts, and think that we like to deal with hyperbole. We like to exaggerate situations in order to attract listeners and get people talking about our show. I'm not really about that. I am a very cautious person. I tend to try to look at situations based on my experience and look at where we are and what direction we are going. And I tell this story, although it's not related to what I want to talk about, but so you understand how my brain operates. We had in Mississippi one of the worst natural disasters to hit our state. And it hit Louisiana and Alabama too. It was Hurricane Katrina. Either a year or two before that, this happened in August of 2005. And it was either a year or two before that. One of the privileges, I guess, of being a legislator is that you get to go on trips. And so, I don't know, it was a Gulf Coast Chamber of Commerce thing or is a particular, I think it was a Gulf Coast, Mississippi Gulf Coast event where they wanted to give us a tour of what was going on in the coast and trying to get us as legislators to support their delegation in pushing for whatever state monies were available for economic development. That's usually when they have these trips, they're looking for money, right? And so we're going down U.S. Highway 90, which is kind of like the main drag of the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And I noticed all of these gigantic, beautiful, multi-story condominiums being built right on Highway 90, which is literally right there by the water, by the beach. It's actually what separates most of the cities from the beach. So I'm looking at all of this, and it's awesome. You already had the casinos, right? And, you know, of course, that was part of the highlight. But it was just, they were showing all this building, all this development. And I had, we were still on the bus. And the guy is explaining to us all this wonderful stuff that's going on. And I guess, I don't know if I was the harbinger. I actually used that term in my question. Or trying to rain on their parade or nothing. But I basically said, in essence, aren't you concerned about a major hurricane coming down here and destroying all this? I mean, is it practical for us to be building like this in an area that has been known for major storms? Now, granted, at that point, we hadn't had a major hurricane hit Mississippi in a while. And the most devastating at that point was Camille. And that was like in the late 60s. I want to say 69, something like that. May have been earlier. It was in the 60s. Because I know Hurricane Betsy hit New Orleans real hard, like in 69. I know Lyndon Johnson was the president when that happened. Not by memory, by research. But anyway, and they all kind of looked at me like, really, Fleming? Really? This is the question you want to ask these people? And I was like, yeah, because if something happens, the big bad wolf hurricane shows up and blows all these houses down, the state of Mississippi is going to have to pay for that. They're going to have to pay for the recovery. So, yeah, I think it's a pertinent question. And, of course, they downplayed it. They talked about the fact that, storms hadn't hit and these buildings were being built to a specific code and all that, yada, yada, right? Well, then Katrina happened. So I deliberately, a month after Katrina happened, I went down with a group to help folks move stuff, find some assistance, that kind of thing. Just trying to, there were some people that the group knew that needed some help moving furniture out and cleaning out debris and all this kind of stuff on their property. Get mold out, all that kind of stuff, right? So I'm down there with this group, but I deliberately took the time to go to this particular spot, and it was the spot where I asked the question, right? And it was this, had to have been at least 10 stories, probably was higher than that. Beautiful building. And that was seeing that building that close to the beach was what triggered my question. So I went to where that building was built. And there was absolutely nothing left but the foundation. Nothing. No remnants that a building was even there other than the slab. Right. So I tell you that story because my mind works in a way where I see stuff and I'm like, are you aware of what could happen or what is coming? And I always try to intellectually anticipate. And, having a mind, even though I wasn't a great athlete, I have a sports mind. And so strategy is important. You really, in basically every sport, have to anticipate your opponent's moves. You have to know what plays they like to run, what tendencies they have in certain situations, who's probably the most likely person to, you know, do damage to your team, right? So you have to anticipate. And, you know, I apply a lot of that in politics. Now, I say all that, and I took all that time to say all that, to basically tell you the reason why I'm saying that it's not safe for us anymore. It's because I see, based on all of this activity that's really, really happening really, really fast, that it's really not safe for us. That it's really being escalated to a point where 2024, I believe, is going to be more than an election. It's going to be, for lack of a better term, a reckoning. And the comfort that these people that we are dealing with that are trying to hold on to white supremacy, the comfort in which they are executing their plans and putting forth their agenda makes me realize that it's not safe. And I'm not the only one that thinks that, right? The NAACP has literally issued a travel advisory for anyone of color or anybody from the LGBTQ community to be careful going to Florida. I don't think they have really done that before. They may have. They may have done it in the 60s, right? With the South. You kind of had that with the Green Book, right? And those of y'all who don't know, the Green Book was basically a traveler's guide for Black people, especially in the South. And it designated places that were safe. It was kind of like a 1940s, 50s version of Yelp, right? These are the spots that are cool for Black people to go to, either to eat, get gas, go to sleep. They even made a movie about it with, I can never say his first name, but Brother Ali, the Oscar award winner, and another guy, I can't really say his name either, but Ali was playing a Black classical pianist who had this white guy taking him around, and basically they were using the Green Book to navigate through the South as he was appearing at these white establishments to play, right? But it's something that all of the entertainers, what they called the Chitlin' Circuit, they used it. Negro League baseball teams, you know, and just average, ordinary Black folks that had to travel through the South to get to where they were going, whether it was to visit relatives or passing through. Everybody Black that was traveling had to have access to a Green Book so they would know where it was safe. So the NAACP has basically said that Florida is not safe, period, for Black folks to go to, let alone Latinos. Although Asians may be different. Now, kind of come back to that real quick. And LGBTQ folks of any color. It's not safe for them to go. And that's pretty serious. But the NAACP is not the only one that's issued an advisory. The government of Canada, prior to the NAACP doing it, issued a similar advisory. And folks kind of tried to downplay it, but government of Canada is basically telling its Black, Indigenous, Latino, Asian, LGBTQ community that if you go to the United States and you go to Florida, be careful. And travel advisories are something that if you go to the U.S. Department's State Department's or U.S. Department of State website, they have these travel advisories for different countries. If you're going to a foreign country, I would advise you to go to that website first and make sure that the country you're going to visit doesn't have a travel advisory. And if they do, read it. Because you might be going to a part of the country that is safe, but you need to know that. And they have these travel advisories. Well, that's basically the equivalent of what the NAACP just did, right? And what Canada had done earlier. They've issued travel advisories. And the reason why I said, let me come back around the Asian thing is because in Florida, you know, they're banning books, right? And they're taking over colleges where they can. And they're arresting people who are voting. And, you know, they're trying to persecute teachers if they show a Disney movie, right? I mean, Florida is getting off the chain. Really, really. And we've documented this, and not just me, but other people that have common sense, have been paying attention to what's going on in Florida. And we've talked about how some of the citizens, especially the college students, are fighting back. And I highlighted the Divine Nine at Florida A&M. Well, the kids graduating from the New College of Florida, I think that's what it's called, which was basically created in 1960 to give people who didn't have a chance to go to the University of Florida or Florida State or Harvard or Yale, give them a chance to get a college education. And it kind of developed into this haven where people of color and LGBTQ students, it was a safe space for them to get an education because diversity was the key focus of that school. Well, one of the first things DeSantis did in his start of his second term was to basically fire all the trustees of that college and put in people of his ilk to serve on that advisory board or the board of trustees for that school. And change the curriculum from a quote unquote liberal arts style to more of a Christian school. That's the long-term goal. And so for their graduation, he had, or this board that he appointed, and I say him because his fingerprints are all over everything that's going on in Florida. He had the guy who Donald Trump had picked to be his COVID advisor. Who basically his claim to fame was that we should practice herd immunity, meaning let everybody get it and those who survive, survive, right? And those who live will have the antibodies and will shut COVID or any of his variants down in the future. That guy, I think his name is Atlas or something. Anyway, they picked this guy to be the commencement speaker. Now, when I was in school, it was like the students had input into who the commencement speaker would be, right? And then it was a matter of whether we could afford him or not. In my case, it was Mike Espy, so he was free, right? Brian Gumbel, the year before, basically took the check that Jackson State gave him and gave it back to the school, set up scholarship, right? So, you know, it just all depends. I mean, Oprah, Bill Cosby, you know, they were charging a lot of money. Still do, probably. But it's a lot of money for a Mississippi black school to be paying at that time. So anyway, Mike Espy was our class's choice, but we had some say-so, right? Now, the administration could overrule it, but we were in the conversation. At least they knew who we wanted, right? And it was timely because he had become the first black congressman since Reconstruction in Mississippi. So that was an important moment, right? And felt that would be a cool guy to talk. So these students in the New College of Florida didn't get that choice. They were told this was going to be the guy. So what they did, they set up their own commencement and they had their own speaker come in, Maya Wiley, who's over the Civil Rights Conference, Leadership Conference. And, you know, and they had a grand old time. They dressed up, you know, like it's mermaids or whatever. And they had a good time. And then when they went to the formal graduation where Miss Dr. Atlas was speaking, basically when he started speaking, they were yelling, wrap it up, wrap it up. All right. He wasn't even into the speech about 2 or 3 minutes before they started yelling, wrap it up. Right. So that's the kind of environment that's going on in Florida. Now, in Arkansas, our friend Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you remember her, she was the spokesperson for Donald Trump, the longest serving, probably most famous spokesperson for Donald Trump while he was president. You know, she got elected governor over a black man who was an astrophysicist and a preacher, right? Arkansans picked her over him. So now they're getting what they deserve. Well, or what they wanted. Because now she's already taken these crazy steps to outlaw the word Latinx, right? So you hear me use the term Latino, and sometimes I'll throw in Latinx because that's a term that has been identified in the Latino community to be totally inclusive. You just replace the O with an X, and now, you know, everybody. If you're a member of the LGBTQ community, if you're an Afro-Latino, whatever. It's supposed to be a more inclusive term. Well, Sarah Huckabee Sanders has outlawed the word in the state of Arkansas. Literally. You cannot put Latinx on any government documents in the state of Arkansas. It has to be Latino or Hispanic. It cannot be Latinx. So that's how she kind of started, right? And she's done some other things. So recently, I think as of the day that today, as I'm recording this, they basically have made a decision that they're not going to continue their school desegregation policy. Now, for those of you who understand history like I do, for the governor of Arkansas to do that, that's really, really sending a message. That's literally shooting into Fort Sumter. Right? That's literally the shot across the bow. That's literally crossing General Travis's line. That's really, really sending a message. Because it was Arkansas Central High School, to be exact, which is literally walking distance from the Capitol. When it was the Little Rock Nine desegregated at school, and they literally had to have Eisenhower activated the National Guard to protect these nine students to integrate Central High School in Little Rock. And the governor now of that same state has said, yeah, we need to get rid of these segregation policies because Arkansas has progressed so much, right? That's just kind of the tip of the iceberg, right, of why I'm telling you that unless you and your friends and your colleagues and your allies totally commit to fighting this thing, that it's not going to be safe for us any longer. Now, some of you have probably said, it hasn't been safe for us for a long time, and I don't think it's ever been safe for us and all that. And I really can't get into an argument with you about that semantically. But, you know, if you were able to get up, get in your car, go to work, come back home, go to the store, do certain things, you know, that's considered safe. Right. If you go travel and you don't get harassed by the natives in that state or whatever, you know, you can go to certain neighborhoods. You know, go to these little small towns or these fairs or whatever. That's considered a safe environment. You're in an environment where you can freely move about. But I'm telling you right now, if we do not escalate our protests, it's not going to be safe. It's not going to be routine. They've already sent you messages when little white boys are going up into grocery stores and churches and schools and whatever and shooting up people. And you see how they're treated as opposed to, say, a black kid with a knife running away from the police, or a kid with a toy gun, or just a kid with some iced tea and some Skittles, right? or even a kid that may have stolen some licorice. We have seen how they treat us in those instances. We have seen how we have told people, yeah, I have a permit for a gun, and then I get shot. Not me personally, but that person, right? Or you question an officer for stopping you, and then the next minute you're dead in a jail cell. Or somebody goes to the wrong house, and instead of saying, excuse me, sorry, and go to the right house and arrest the person, you kill the person that is in the house that you wrongly entered. We see how all this is happening to us. Now, and I'm telling you, these folks are not going to be satisfied until they take it to another level. So we'll get into that on the other side. All right, and we are back. So, I want to start off the second half to really hone in on why I'm saying it's not safe. So, this white woman named Carolyn Bryant died recently. If that name sounds familiar to you, it's because Carolyn Bryant was the lady who accused Emmett Till of winking and whistling and being disrespectful to her, which led to his lynching in Money, Mississippi. And although her husband and his brother-in-law and some other white dude went to trial and were acquitted and later admitted that they did it to Look Magazine afterwards, she never faced any charges for that, for lying. So, you know, those of us in the Christian faith, we believe in heaven and hell. And there's a lot of people that believe that she's in hell. I don't really have time to get into that kind of discussion, theological discussion, but there were a lot of people that were happy that she's died. And then there were a lot of people that were mad that she died without having to face the music. There was an attempt to try to bring her to justice during her, basically, now we've come to find out, her last days. But the district attorney, who happens to be black for that area, pretty much didn't push it. And it's primarily because I think he knew she was about to go. And probably she wouldn't have been alive by the time the trial would have been set. So he made that call, which was unpopular for him. He's going to have to face the voters in his district based on that decision. He'll probably win, but, you know, it wasn't a popular move. So she's gone physically. But the fact that she got away with it enables that spirit to live on. And we saw it happen on the steps of the United States Capitol last week. So I know that there's 435 congressmen and not every and congressmen and women. And I know that in the House. And I know that not everybody knows all of these people except, you know, a few that get national headlines. Right. Well, two of the people that normally get headlines are Jamaal Bowman and Marjorie Taylor Greene. And they actually had a moment. Bowman, who is from New York, was really out there harassing, and I say harassing, taunting, whatever, George Santos, who had just been indicted on several felony counts. And, you know, he was basically, as Santos was passing by, he was basically yelling that he should resign. You know, rather than continue this fiasco. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene kind of strolled up behind the Santos caravan or posse or crew, whatever you want to call it, right? The gaggle, even. And she started confronting Congressman Brown, Bowman. And so they were going back and forth, you know, and she was talking about, she was actually trying to lead a cheer to say impeach Biden. And, you know, every time he said something, she said something else that wasn't related to what he was saying. And they were just going back and forth. They were, you know, she even said that the children that Donald Trump separated was the fact that they haven't found their parents is Biden's fault. Yeah. We could do a whole show on that. I could probably round up every immigration lawyer I could find just to basically debunk that, right? But she was basically saying that, yeah, these kids that, you know, don't have parents, it's like, she was saying that they lost him. He was like saying, it's crazy. We love the children. What are you talking about? You know, so they just had this back and forth, and it's on Twitter and it's all over the internet if you want to see it. So the next day, Marjorie Taylor Greene gets up in front of a microphone and says that she felt threatened by Representative Bowman, that he was aggressive and he had this tone and she just didn't feel safe around him. Now, mind you, this is the woman who, before even she got elected to Congress, was literally doing what Bowman was doing to Santos, was doing that to victims of the Parkland shooting, right? The high school there in Parkland, Florida. She was harassing them in a similar way, right? She has literally got into verbal, nearly physical confrontations with her female colleagues on the other side of the aisle, especially Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or as we like to call her, AOC, right? And the sister from St. Louis, Congresswoman Bush, right? Basically, she's gone after the whole squad. And she's even had some confrontation with her counterpart, Lauren Boebert, especially when we were dealing with this 5 days of trying to decide who the speaker was going to be. Or 5 days of Kevin McCarthy capitulating to be the speaker, right? So for her to say it from just a standpoint based on her track record is typical hypocrisy, right? Don't do as I do as I say, all that stuff. But, you know, Jamaal Bowman is a black man. And she is a white woman from the South. And just like Carolyn Bryant, when that white woman says that that black man threatened her or disrespected her, that's going to raise some shackles, as we say. It's going to stir some people up the wrong kind of way. And Bowman went on national TV and basically said, hey, this is exactly what happened. Even Gavin Newsom made the Emmett Till reference, the governor of California. He said, this is exactly why Emmett Till was lynched. He said that. These kind of actions, this kind of rhetoric, this white woman saying this black man scared her, right? That's this whole Karen phenomenon that's out here, that's gone beyond the South and just permeated white America throughout the country. Yeah, you know, this black man is just, he came at me the wrong way. He threatened me. He made me feel unsafe. In an era where we already have young white men charged, amped up to go into public places where black people are and shoot them, you really were doing your best to set up a fellow colleague to be either attacked or killed. Because if you really have any sense of history, you knew what you were doing when you did that. And don't think that these people are crazy to the point where they don't have any concept of what they're doing. They're crazy like a fox, as they used to say back in the day. They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what to say, when to say it, how to say it, in order to get their base to respond the way that they, and it's tried and true. It's been done for literally centuries in the United States. It's been done. And here she is trotting up to that microphone. The chick that on 60 Minutes you see is in the gym pumping iron and all this stuff. She's going to say that this black man made her feel unsafe. She's not the typical Southern belle as they tried to portray Carolyn Bryant back in the day. You know, she's a gym rat. She runs a construction company. It's not a, you know, I guess it's the modern version of the Steel Magnolia. I don't know. All I know is that's the reason why it's not safe. Because when these people start using those tropes, they start using that form of gaslighting, and they have been doing it, and they've been emboldened to do it basically since Barack Obama took that oath of office. It took them a couple of years to build up the Tea Party in 2010, and then it's evolved now to where we are 13 years later. Where we've decided that we're going to separate cities, where we're going to not give majority black cities the resources they need, where we're going to penalize or even just take away black people's voting rights or their ability to exercise their rights, right? We don't want them studying their own history, right? And I don't think I finished my thought about the Asian American. So in Florida, you know, they were banning books and all this stuff, right? So they said it was okay. and said it was a requirement for AP students in Florida to study Asian American history, but not Black American or African American history, right? They wanted to make that an elective or just rewrite it so it's conforming, but the Asian American history is okay. And to the credit, there's been a lot of Asian activists coming on social media saying, don't fall for this trick. Because what people like DeSantis and them are doing is trying to prop us up as the ideal minority while continuing to oppress Black and brown people. Don't fall for the trick. Right? They're trying to divide us. People of color are people of color. So don't get caught in the okey-doke because he's saying it's all right to study Asian American history, but not Black or Latino history, right? So that's why I was saying earlier that the Asian community may be feeling a little different, but to their credit, there's been conscious people in that community sounding the alarm, saying it's not really a victory. And remember that to show how this divide is working, one of the cases that's before the Supreme Court to deal with affirmative action was brought by Asian students. So, you know, that's just part of the strategy. It's like, if you would just be like them, we wouldn't have any problems with y'all. And fortunately, there are some folks in the Asian community that see that game and are trying to call it out for what it is. Anyway. So that's why I'm saying it's not safe. Right? It's not safe for us. Unless we decide that we're going to fight it. I mentioned in the previous podcast, it seems like they're trying to kill us. And again, people will say that's hyperbole and all that stuff, and that's a conspiracy theory and all that. But I'm just looking at their actions. I'm just looking at, I'm listening to their rhetoric. I'm watching them operate. And to me, I see a group of people associated with a particular political party that's coming after us. Now, there are Black people in that particular political party, especially one now who has declared that he wants to be president, Senator Tim Scott. He's going to seek the nomination. That's great. And you've got talking heads like Lee Elder and not Lee, Lord Jesus, Larry Elder and Candace Owens and other folks who are touting the Republican platform, even some of this extreme stuff, right? Well, I hope that when it all really comes down, as they say, to the nut cutting, that they hedge their bets on the right horse, right? Because I hate for it to be a Hollywood drama where it's like the race war happens. And in one scene, we see people like them, you know, thinking they're okay. And then they get taken out, you know. And they have this look of confusion as they die, right? I don't want that scenario to happen. I don't want any of that extreme scenario, Hollywood movie scenario to happen. But what I do want people to understand is that if this goes unchecked, it's no telling how this is going to end. Because if they continue to push this kind of rhetoric and say these kind of things without major, major pushback, it's one thing to have organizations like the NAACP, like PUSH, like the SCLC, like La Raza and all these other groups that traditionally fight against any kind of discrimination, right? The Urban League, all these people. It's one thing for the organizations to do it. That's what they were created to do. But the strength of these organizations falls in the community. You know, you can have elected representation in the halls of government, but if the community doesn't back them up, then we see what happens. They run them over with this kind of legislation. Right? And all of this stuff that they are pushing is for one goal, and that is to maintain control through white supremacy, period. Whether it's dealing with abortion, whether it's dealing with gun rights, whether it's dealing with book banning, ending school desegregation, backing the blue, all of this stuff is geared toward one purpose. And that's control. Control by white folks. And half of the women are down with that. White women. Again, 53% of white women voted against a white woman to be president of the United States. Because she wasn't touting the agenda that Donald Trump was touting. She wasn't a candidate for white supremacy. He was. And so the majority of white women voted for the candidate that was pushing or for maintaining white control, right? If you look at the core of each one of these issues that they are touting, even threatening to put the government in default if they can't cut stuff that benefits people of color, right? Because they're not going to talk about cutting the Department of Defense. They're not going to talk about raising taxes on the wealthiest Americans. They're not going to talk about that. They want to make it harder for you to get food. They want to make it harder for you to get Social Security. They want to make it harder for you to get veterans benefits. These are the things that they want to cut. Or their attitude is, let the country go into default. And there's no international court of bankruptcy for countries. Either you pay your bills or you don't. And it's because we've given tax breaks to the wealthiest of the wealthy. And we have done all these things to limit how much they contribute while we continue to bear the brunt of paying taxes. Average working people. Now we're in a situation where the bill is due. And we continue to spend money and spend it in a way that's totally unacceptable, right? When I was in the legislature, I introduced a bill that said that you couldn't charge a government, the government of the state of Mississippi, higher than fair market value for your product, for your service. Because the tendency is that if I'm just a regular business, either I pay market value or I get a discount because I'm bringing volume to the situation, like say a Walmart, right? But when it comes to the government, it's like, ooh, all of this tax money is sitting there. We want to get as much of it as we can. And so the lowest bid usually is higher than what the market value dictates for the service that they provide. And so that's why these governments are spending this kind of money, right? Whether it's state government or the federal government. But with states, all 50 states basically have to balance their budget. Most of them have to balance it, or else the legislature can't end. That session can't end until they have a balanced budget. Mississippi is one of those states. Georgia is one of those states. But the federal government doesn't have that. There's been an amendment to say that the budget has to be balanced, but it's never become part of the Constitution. So federal government doesn't have that restriction. Federal government doesn't even have to pass a budget, as been proven over the last 10, 12 years. They just operate, right? It's like they'll do like some piecemeal stuff, approve this appropriation here, this appropriation, but they don't do a budget anymore. Right? Anyway, all this is contributing to this chaotic atmosphere, which allows people to push this rhetoric to maintain white supremacy. As long as there's chaos, there's got to be order, right, to stop the chaos. And their argument is that the reason why it's chaotic is we're trying to invite too many people to the party. You're trying to give black people access to the party. You're trying to give Latinos access to the party. You're trying to give Asian American Pacific Islanders access to the party. You're trying to reach back in time and give the indigenous people access to the party. And then, you know, these people based on their sexual orientation, you want to give them access to the party too. And these folks saying enough is enough. The only people that should have access to the party are really white Christian nationalists. I mean, if you don't fall under that, even if you're white, if you don't fall under that, you really shouldn't have access to the party. That's the mindset that these folks have. And they are proving each and every day that they will stop at nothing until they achieve that. Including making it unsafe for you to just merely exist, let alone go to the store, go to church, go to school, walk down the street, right? Go vote. They want to make sure that you understand that you're not welcome, that we really don't care what you say or what you do. The only thing you can bring to the table is some value of entertainment or some value of some labor, period. Anything beyond that, you're pushing it. And it doesn't matter that the law has changed where now we're full citizens and not 3/5 of a human being anymore. That mindset is still there. And if they want to argue and say it's not still there, then show me through the policies that you have been pushing, not just in Florida, But in a lot of these states that you control, show me otherwise. Because I basically can tell you piece by piece how that legislation is doing the opposite of what you say it is. And then what's crazy is that they are boldly saying, yeah, we're trying to control things. This is the place where woke goes to die. You've heard that, right? As if being woke is a problem. I grew up with a mindset that when you ask somebody, how are they doing? Oh, the Lord woke me up today. Hallelujah. It's a good thing to be woke. That's how you know that you're alive. You've been awakened. But these people have created a phrase to say, we want woke to die. My translation is that they want me to die. And if you don't take that kind of attitude toward it, if you don't take it personal, then you're not going to be motivated to do what you need to do to stop it. Now, you can get reminded, yeah, we go vote these people out. But then you have this mindset like, well, they gerrymandered these districts. Well, they always seem to find a way to win anyway. Oh, all these folks, they don't care about us. So you take that energy and withdraw instead of getting angry about that and doing something about it. Right? Because they've even conditioned us to basically say that when we are aggressive, when we're outspoken, all these kind of things, that that's not really American. That's not really the way we do things. You have to settle down. You're being threatening. Right? And, you know, when I look at January 6th, they did exactly the opposite of that. When they got pissed, they tried to tear the Capitol building apart. The very Capitol building that represents all of us. They tried to tear it apart. But if black folks had showed up to try to do that, the body count would have been ridiculous. They would have opened fire the minute that we breached any part of that line. They're upset because one white woman got killed. You imagine if it was black folks, the massacre it would have been. I'm just saying, you know, I just want y'all to understand the hypocrisy and the mind games that they're playing on people or trying to play on people. And I know that is easy to just say, well, okay, Eric, you can say what you want to say. I'm down with you, brother. You know, I get it. Then you go on about your way and don't internalize it. Don't take it personal like I'm taking it. And you just go on about just your way and not get further engaged. If I call you or if I put out a post and say, hey, you know, today's election day, it's like, oh, yeah, dog, I got you. And then, you know, you go vote. That's not the same. And some of y'all I know played sports better than I did. You actually excelled in it. So you know what kind of motivation you had to get to prepare for a game, especially a big one. You knew how your mindset had to be. You knew how emotionally invested you had to be to succeed. That's the energy I'm trying to get y'all. And not just me. thank God it's not just me. There are other people that are out here doing the same thing I am doing. And if you say, well, I'm tired of hearing Eric say it, well, turn on somebody else that you like to say that's saying the same thing. All we want you to do is be engaged. Engaged to the point where they are totally uncomfortable. The reason why people like Hitler and Mussolini and Pol Pot and Bhutto and all these other folks succeed is because the majority of the people allowed them to. Because in their mind, the warnings weren't heeded. They weren't taking it serious. They were like, well, I don't think it's going to get to that extreme. I mean, I've said that in sporting events. Like, I don't think this team is going to get swept. I think they're going to win one game, right? You know, I think they're going to, you know, I think they're going to get to the next round of the playoffs. You know, I think they're going to win at least 8 games or 50 games. It all depends on what sport it is, right? Only for reality to kick in and realize that team sucks or that team's not good enough to get to the championship, right? I need you all to get into a mindset that is really that bad. That is really not safe for us. And the only way we can protect ourselves is to stand up to it in mass numbers. Now, am I so self-absorbed that I think once you hear this particular episode, it's like, you know what? Eric is right. I'm going to go out and do it. Just millions of people just start protesting against all this stuff. I'm not delusional like these people are, right? I'm not like that. And, you know, it's almost like the call of the preacher, right? It's like if the sermon was that good, he wouldn't have to come back next Sunday and preach it again. But that preacher shows up every Sunday and basically delivers the good news every Sunday. Everybody bobs their head, says amen, get hyped, and then once they leave, it's back to the routine. Until it gets to a point. Right? And that's the reason why Dr. King and Malcolm X and these other people are so revered, is because they hammered it home to a point where it finally struck a nerve and people moved. And black people were very fortunate these guys were existing at the same time, right? So you were catching it from all directions. It's time to do something. And black folks did. Because the apathy that you see now, black folks had that apathy too. Don't get caught up in the mythology and all that stuff. The way people are acting now, people were acting that way 50, 60 years ago. But these brothers persisted. Those sisters like Ella Baker persisted and Fannie Lou Hamer, they persisted. And when you just saw leader after leader, wave after wave, commitment after commitment start just hammering the community, community finally said, you know what? Yeah, I think it's time for us to move. And we did. So my job, along with thousands of others that are out here doing what I'm doing, whether it's through a podcast, whether it's through grassroots organizing, whatever, we're going to keep hammering this message. I know some of y'all have turned off the news in your routine and you're into the streaming and all that stuff. Okay. But the world is still happening. as you try to escape it. And at some point, you're going to realize that you can't. And I'm not trying to admonish you. I'm just dealing with facts. These people are out here working to make sure that, I mean, they literally are talking about banning a website. There's a state that says, oh, yeah, you can't have TikTok in our state anymore. How in the hell are they going to stop that? They don't even know. But it's too many of you woke people on that social media site, so we're going to shut it down. That's all it is. It ain't got nothing to do with China spying and all that stuff. It's about, and I'm going to try to get that brother. TikTok has a black man that's one of their head lobbyists. I'm trying to get him on this podcast so y'all can hear the real story. You know, but the reality is that it's too many of y'all folks using this medium to get this message across to these folks, you know, what the game plan is. So we're going to shut it down. That's what it's all about. And they've got some Democrats caught up in that hype too. People are people. It doesn't matter what party they're in, they can be fooled. You understand what I'm saying? The reality is that any medium that challenges the authority of white supremacy is a threat, and they want to eradicate it. So if your vote doesn't count, why are these folks taking all these steps to stop it? If your history doesn't matter, why are all these folks taking steps to try to ban it? If social media doesn't matter, then why are these folks trying to shut it down? If newspapers and television news didn't matter, why are they trying to control the narrative? That's how we have to think. It's not about, oh, well, yeah, they must have done something. No, they didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong about our history. There's nothing wrong about wanting to vote. There's nothing wrong about getting information. What is wrong is trying to whitewash history, suppress voting, and misinform people to maintain control. That's what's wrong. And we need to stop it, or else it's not going to be safe for us anymore. It's okay for you to disagree with me. I don't mind having disagreements. But as Brother Baldwin said, if your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and the denial of my humanity and right to exist, we got a problem. Until next time.